Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From our Jerome L. Green Performance Space, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And now we continue our New York-New Jersey election series, 30 issues in 30 days. Issue 5, where do you want to live after college? Why is this an election issue? Well, a New Jersey brain drain has specifically become an issue in the governor's race, and New York is increasingly unaffordable for young professionals, and the ability to attract that kind of labor force is necessary to economic growth, certainly how New York sees itself. So how can the area attract and keep an educated young workforce? For those of you just tuning in, we have a few dozen college students and other 20-somethings in our audience with us here in the green space to answer the question, plus three guests: Joel Kotkin, a presidential fellow in urban futures at Chapman University in Orange, California, who writes the New Geographer column for Forbes magazine, and here in the green space, WNYC's Bob Henley and Andrea Bernstein, veteran New Jerseyan and veteran New Yorker, respectively. Welcome to you all.
Thanks, Brian.
And I heard the ahs and oohs of recognition. Yes, that's what Andrea Bernstein looks like, and Bob Henley.
And can I just say, Brian, that I was a listener before I was ever here, and I, too, am honored to be here on your 20th anniversary. And happy anniversary.
Thank you very much, really. And listeners, as always, when we're in the green space, you can also watch our show today via live streaming video at WNYC.org. So if you want to know what Bob and Andrea look like, go to WNYC.org right now to watch today's program as well as listen. And let's turn to the college students in our audience first and just get a sense. By applause, how many of you left a hometown to go to college somewhere else? How many of you lived outside the greater metropolitan area among those of you who just applauded?
Adventurous.
Yes. So many of you who are college students here came to this area to go to college. How many of you aspire to still be living in this area 5 years from now? Most. All right. And how many of you are doubtful that that might be possible despite your best efforts? All right. So a fair amount of optimism, because that was just a smattering of applause at the end, about this area. Bob Henley, why is a brain drain an issue in the governor's race?
I guess what happened in the last presidential race was President Obama got numbers that had never seen before in terms of engaging that, at least in New Jersey, young people. And for the Democrats, it's essential to get them to show back up. They minted some 700,000 new Democrats in that cycle. And on the other hand, for Christie, the Republican candidate, one of the things that Corzine had to do was cut back on a program that got everybody really excited called the STARS program. And I have to declare my bias. I have a nephew who was caught up in this, where New Jersey was aware of the fact that so many kids leave to go to other colleges, that the idea was if you had good grades in a secondary school in New Jersey, you would then qualify for the opportunity to go to community college. And then if you got A's there, you'd have a scholarship to continue to a four-year college in New Jersey. Didn't happen. They, like my nephew, called up and said, you know, I participated, made the grade, and then all of a sudden the politicians pulled the rug out. So that's kind of become an issue. The other thing is the whole question in this latest debate, young people are front and center in the healthcare debate. And so all three campaigns now are speaking directly to the challenge of getting young people enrolled in healthcare. One of the things that Corzine's got to his benefit is under his regime, and as a parent of a 20-something wandering around the country, this gave me great relief, if you're in your parents' household, your insurance company has to continue to carry you as a beneficiary, which is essential. So that's kind of the broad strokes of it.
Andrea, in New York, New York City has long been a magnet for educated young Americans, educated young people from all over the world, as well as, of course, many other people coming here for opportunity. Is that changing in the new economic reality?
It doesn't appear to be changing, although obviously the challenge for Mayor Bloomberg is what to do in the wake of the Wall Street collapse, also the challenge for his opponent Bill Thompson in the mayor's race, and all of the sort of ancillary issues that are thrown off by that: affordable housing, quality of life. Those are sort of the, those are the essential issues confronting New York, which prior to the Wall Street boom was the gap between the haves and the have-nots was becoming so wide and the availability of affordable housing was becoming so low that city officials were actually worried that some of the attractions of the city, like young artists coming to the city, were in danger of collapsing, some of the things that have been economic engines for the city.
Now, we're having a little trouble with Joel Kotkin's phone line, so we're going to bring him in a few minutes, we hope, and we get that straightened out. I'll just give you a little data here from the Mercer 2009 Quality of Living Survey. This is for the most livable cities in the world, and European cities dominate the top of the ranking. Vienna scores the highest for overall quality of living. How many of you aspire to move to Vienna? No, I didn't think so. Baghdad, the lowest. Singapore ranks, no surprise there, right? probably Kabul is catching up to it at the bottom of the... Singapore ranks top city for infrastructure. London ranks eighth. The top five cities overall, Vienna, Zurich, Geneva, Vancouver, and Auckland. Who knows where Auckland is?
New Zealand.
Okay, that's not in the Bay Area. top five cities for infrastructure, Singapore, Munich, Copenhagen, Tsukuba, Japan, and Yokohama, Japan. And then America's most livable cities, according to a Forbes ranking, Portland, Maine, tops the list. Thought I was going to say Portland, Oregon. Followed by Bethesda, Maryland, and Des Moines. Followed by the Bridgeport-Stamford area of Connecticut in our area.
Is Knoxville on the list?
And Tulsa.
In response to these livable cities things, they are not necessarily measuring what is attractive to young people. And we know that what is attractive to young people is density, is access to mass transit.
What about affordability, though?
Affordability? It is also affordability. But the sort of things that, New York has this very extensive transit system that is used by some two-thirds of its residents, which is a very different arrangement from most other American cities. So that is one of the sort of driving forces, and a lot of cities around the country are trying to emulate that thing in New York, which is the density, the transit, the walkability. And those things tend to not be measured on those surveys of quality of life.
I know, and we'll get back to this, Bob, that one of the issues that the gubernatorial candidates are concerned about is keeping employers in New Jersey. And if the employers aren't there with the high-skilled jobs, then the educated workforce is not going to flop.
I think there's something much deeper going on that's bigger than politicians, which is that we have ill-prepared our kids for the current crisis because we have loaded them down with debt about a numeric line that says the narrative is you go to college, get an MBA, and get fabulous education.
That's right.
I didn't get to complete college. Okay, I went to a public school, Ramapo, $370 a semester. I had to, in order to get here today, do a lot of different things. Roof, operate heavy equipment, build homes. I don't know if that skill set is out there, and that's going to be traumatic for them. In my work outside here, in community work, I find young people look at a circular saw and like, well, are we going to call somebody to operate it? So there's a lack of practical life skills that kids don't have, which create this some of this frustration.
So to the college students in our audience here at the Green Space, let's dig a little deeper on what you applauded on before. The question is, where did you grow up and where do you want to live after college? And what attributes should a place like that have? Now, this isn't binding. You're not signing a lease. Just your gut reaction.
The limousine's rolling outside. We'll take you to the airport immediately.
Where do you think you want to live after college? Somebody's got a hand up over there. Do we have a microphone to go over there to that person? Where are our microphone jockeys? Where should I be looking?
Right here.
Okay. Down there. Hi.
Hi. My name's Anthony, and I'm a sophomore at NYU.
Okay, let's get that microphone on. Sorry.
Now you can go.
Yeah,
I'm a sophomore at NYU, and I grew up in India, but I moved to Fort Worth, Texas, when I was 9. And there's a very good reason I left Fort Worth, Texas, because I came to New York to go to school. And this is very E.B. White-esque of me, but I can't imagine living anywhere else after college. I mean, I know it's difficult. I don't even live on campus anymore, but you can live in any of the five boroughs, and you're talking about practical skill sets. I'm prepared to do just about anything to keep living here.
Why? Why are you so desperate to be a New Yorker?
There's mass transit. There's things to do. You don't have to go to bed at 7 in the evening because there's nowhere else to go. Yeah, I live 5 minutes away from the green space, which is another wonderful place to go when you're bored. There is a wealth of opportunity, regardless of how expensive it is. You know, I pay rent now, and there's an enormous financial strain on my family that I live here now. But there is no way you could ever make me leave. There's not, for no reason.
It's going to be the new advertising slogan for this theater. A wonderful place to go when you're bored.
No, you got that wrong. It's a reason to stay up after 7.
There you go. Tulsa, can you hear me? Who else? Over there. We've got a
Hi, Brian. I'm Nancy Campbell. I'm 31, actually. I'm not a 20-something, but I did want to address this. I just graduated from a graduate program. I'm getting married next summer.
And
thank you. But all that being said and done, we are concerned about our quality of life here because we are trying to own a home one day, maybe have a couple of kids, and just try to settle down. I was here in my mid-20s. I loved it. It's totally feasible for you in your late 20s. You can roommate, you can schlep it. But once you get beyond 30, what about the middle-class 30-year-olds who need to kind of move on? That's who I'm concerned
about. So what about this area makes it challenging for somebody with your aspirations?
A lot of it is affordability. So we live in the slope, but I'm willing to live anywhere else if I can afford a good two-bedroom, a relatively easy commute. So it's transportation, it's affordability, it's resources, and it's also a network. So can we both be gainfully employed and feel confident with that employment if we take on a mortgage, if we take on more of a serious life investment here?
Thank you very much. So, Andrea, these are the kinds of things that the mayoral candidates are grappling with,
absolutely.
Because we obviously need not just, the NYU student who wants to stay here and live close mm-hmm. to Manchester and
we'll do anything to stay here.
Go to the green space when she's bored. We need the middle class families in their 30s and beyond.
Right. It's a absolutely. And it's the central tenet of Thompson's campaign, which is that Mayor Bloomberg has made it and has increasingly made it this an unaffordable city. The criticism that he has focused his development on luxury high-rises, or he's created a city where that's been allowed to happen, where there are increasingly few middle-class jobs. The challenge for Thompson is that, the affordability is one piece of it. The quality of life is also one piece of it, and that's an area where Bloomberg is really sort of, kind of pummeling him around the boxing ring on that issue. So there's a sort of a lively, if under the radar, debate going on about, for example, bike lanes and the Times Square closure and the street space, which Bloomberg has sort of made front and center of his transportation and sort of quality of life in public space. And Thompson is taking a much more measured approach, and he's saying, let's wait and see. Let's see what it does to her business. He has not yet taken a position on Times Square. So that is, there's sort of, it's all of a piece. And the challenge for Thompson is to try to raise those affordability concerns while trying to sort of not allow people to think about the things that they might like that the mayor has done in his first
term. Bob, is there a New Jersey gubernatorial race parallel to that?
Well, I think one of the things we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the parallel America, which is revolves around communities of color. I know we have an African-American president, but we have this legacy of inequity, and it is memorialized in New Jersey and throughout the country in a lot of urban areas where you have unemployment rates. We talk about 10%. Well, among young people, it's huge. It's many times that level. So I think all three gubernatorial candidates have tried to fashion an urban agenda, which for Christie is kind of innovative for a Republican, and then at the same time talking about this livability thing. I mean, one of the things that we have to deal with is the tremendous amount of debt that I mentioned before that young people have saddled with. So I think what we still haven't heard yet is creative ways to get young people, like we're hearing just at the beginning at the federal level, that if you make a commitment to social service or maybe something where you might pick up some of those practical skills in service of the country, you could have forbearance on your debt. We still haven't heard really practical things like that that could give kids a clean slate, because really they were living our dreams and now they're stuck with the bill.
Our 30 Issues in 30 Days series, issue 5, Where Do You Want to Live After College, with WNYC's Andrea Bernstein and Bob Henley. comparing notes on the mayoral race in New York, the gubernatorial race in New Jersey. We're still trying to get our phone hookup straight to Joel Kotkin, who is an expert in what he calls urban futures out in California, and to our live audience in the green space, to more of you who are here from colleges today. How about somebody who came here from another part of the country? Anybody willing to answer a question if you came here from another part of the country to go to school? Hi, where are you from originally and where are you going to school?
I'm from San Clemente, California, and I go to Columbia University.
And were you one of those people who applauded when I asked who wants to live here after college?
I think I'm going to live here. I enjoy it. I like it. We'll see.
Sounds a little ambiguous, Brian.
Well, how come? What are the pros? What are the cons?
It is expensive, but it is easier. It's easier to manage a life here. I sold my car. I can just take the subway. I don't like the winter, but really it all depends on career. And where I can get a career is where I want to go. And
what are you studying?
Political science, but I'm an actor, so New York is for me, I guess.
That's a good combination of...
Well, you know, every politician is a great actor, so...
And you're not going to Portland, Maine anytime soon, right?
No, I am not.
Joel Kotkin is on the phone now, a presidential fellow in urban futures at Chapman University in Orange, California. He writes the New Geographer column for Forbes magazine. Joel, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
That's great, and we can hear you. Do you buy the creative class arguments? We heard it definitely from our NYU student before, the notion that cities should make themselves very arts-friendly with good bike lanes and streetscapes if they want to attract other kinds of employers?
Well, I think that first of all, I mean, to some extent, cities, even before all this was discussed, had a great lure to educated people in their 20s, early 30s. And those things do matter to some extent, but you know, New York has been attracting ambitious young people for a very long time. The problem is holding on to them, and I think that's not addressed by the creative class issue.
Why aren't we holding on to them?
Well, it's really interesting. I did a study with John Bowles over at the Center for Urban Future in New York, so we did, just so you know why you're talking to somebody who's actually 3,000 miles away. And we did lots of focus groups. What we found was very different than the 70s. In the 70s, people really just wanted to get out of New York. Today, many of the people we interviewed in the late 20s, early 30s in particular, they wanted to stay, but they felt, A, that it was unaffordable. B, there were problems if they had children in terms of the schools. C, there was an economy which, although it was terrific for a small group, was not generating enough middle-class jobs to sustain people living there. So, like, for instance, if you make, let's say, $50,000 a year in New York, or you're making essentially that same $50,000 would be $20,000 in many other cities. Mm-hmm. And so people find that they ultimately make a choice. And what's interesting about New York, as opposed to most regions in the country, when people leave the city, they don't so much go to the suburbs, which are also very expensive and, of course, have very high property taxes. They leave the region entirely. And so the New York region has been hemorrhaging people, like many other big urban regions, like Chicago, like Los Angeles, for quite a long time now. And it seems to really be focused not in the people you're talking today, but when they're – talk to them in 10 years or 5 years when – you know, maybe they want to buy a home, or they want to raise a family, or they're looking to start a business, and they can find better opportunities
elsewhere. So what do you do? And unfortunately, we're going to run out of time in a minute, but you're going to get that last minute since we got you on so late. What would you advise to the mayoral candidates in New York, the gubernatorial candidates in New Jersey at the policy level?
A, number one issue is build up your entrepreneurial economy, diversify, make it easier for small businesses to grow and hire people, as opposed to right now where New York and New Jersey are very difficult places to do that. You want to keep your young people in the city, provide a atmosphere for opportunity. That will make the difference.
By the way, you did that so efficiently. You have another 30 seconds. And I gather you're a skeptic of these livable city lists. I was reading the Mercer one, Vienna, Zurich, Geneva, Vancouver, Auckland, New Zealand on the international list, Portland, Maine, Bethesda, Maryland, Des Moines, Iowa on the domestic list. You don't buy these?
Well, I think, you know, it depends what you're looking for. I happen to have written a lot about the international list. I mean, you know, Zurich's a great place if you're a gold bar.
We can't top that. Joel Kotkin, a presidential fellow.
No, complete the sentence. New York is a good place if you are a...
Well, I think New York is a good place if you have a trust fund. It's a great place. I think it's the greatest city in the world, even though I don't live there. But I think that it's got to be a place that a person who is not wealthy can go and
Joel
reach their aspirations.
Bob Henley, Andrea Bernstein, thank you all
thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you. Happy anniversary.